Hi, this is Malak Fouad, and you're listening to the wrap-up episode of Season 3 of What I Did Next from A&T Media. This is the episode where my producer, Chirag Desai, takes over the hosting chair, and we talk about the season. Before we get to our chat, I'd like to take a moment to say thank you to this season's amazing lineup of guests. I'm honored and humbled that this incredible roster of individuals have graced the airwaves of the show over the past few months. I'd also like to send a shout out to you, our listeners. We're delighted that we're reaching more people than last season, and today we're being listened to across the Middle East, from Morocco across to Oman. And we've also picked up some listeners in the US and the UK. Seriously, thanks a lot. Some of you may have noticed that we've increased our activity across social media this past season, putting up fun posts for each episode. This has also generated lots of great feedback. And now I'll hand the main mic over to Chirag, and we'll unpack the best bits from the past season and look ahead to season 4. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Well, hello, Malak.
Hello, Chirag.
We're back again to talk about what is our season wrap-up episode. It started out as an initial idea, and now it's become a tradition, which is we sit down together at the end of a season and talk about kind of our experience of the season, a little bit of reflection around the guests that we had and kind of some of their responses, some of their stories. We also like to get your answers to the staple questions, so we'll get into that as well. But let's kick off, of course, by just kind of doing an overview of the season. So what are your initial thoughts? How do you feel the season went?
For me, it's, I think, the second time we were able to have a good mix of industries and an even split between men and women. Season one for me was very much a trial run and a great starting off point. But it was very Egypt-centric, which was wonderful. But the idea behind the show was always to make it pan-regional. And with season two, we definitely got that mix. And with season three, we were able to continue that. I'm very happy with the mix of people, the fact that we had such a variety of industries. And like season two, we also had some non-Arabs, which I think adds a really nice perspective and adds a nice bit of a mix as well. So obviously we had Kito Deber, who is an honorary Arab after nearly 35 years in the Middle East with McKinsey. And then we had Clarissa Ward, who of course has covered many conflicts in the region during the Arab uprisings, but also before. She was based in Lebanon. And then of course we had that great mix of industries. We have the business community represented by Kito and Ahmed Haykel. We have the design world in the shape of Nadine Kanso. And then, of course, we have the dynamo that is Fatma Saeed, who kicked us off this season. I mean, she's so incredible. It's contagious to be in that sort of company. Then, of course, we had Yusuf Adib, who is such an interesting guy, such a deep thinker. And of course, Sultan Al-Qasimi, who, you know, in this part of the world is so well known for so many things that he's done. And he's such a great role model for his generation and younger. And he's a wonderful ambassador for the UAE and for what it is to be a young Arab man today. Last but not least, Hind Sabri, our superstar, our megastar, a relaxed person, a confident person, sure of herself, very humble, but also a wonderful representative of the cinema industry in the Middle East. And a very intelligent woman, not afraid to wear her intelligence proudly on her sleeve.
Yeah, and I think, a couple of other firsts, I guess. One is that we recorded in person, which was interesting, right? That was the first time we've done that since the show began.
Oh, yeah, forgot about that, in Dubai. That's right.
Up till now, even if the guests were local or not, you were recording out of Egypt. And this time you actually recorded in Dubai, which was interesting. We did a couple of voiceovers together, so that was also a first in a way for the show.
We interviewed Nadine and Yusuf in Dubai.
That's right.
And I think we're planning on doing a few more maybe in the coming season as well.
It's interesting. It's hard to really like quantify or describe, but we've pushed it a little bit further this season, right? Definitely. And I know some of that is a little bit subconsciously done, right? Like we're kind of like, yeah, we want to get this guest or we want to do this because we know it's going to be bigger. And that's not a reflection of someone's following or it's not a reflection of someone's achievement. It's just... I think we pushed the conversation a little bit further, right? So when you were just talking about the industries, like for example, and you mentioned it too, like Fatima's episode was such a breath of fresh air. There was something very relatable and nice about it. And I mean, as you mentioned, she was one of the youngest people to be on the show, yet super self-aware. And, you know, of course she talked about burnout and all of this stuff. But also just the fact that she was in a different industry meant that we had an entirely different conversation about what it's like to understand your voice, something that wouldn't have come up otherwise, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. So you mentioned how, you know, the people we've had has evolved almost. But I think, you know, it's like building blocks. You begin, yep, and then you add, and then it becomes a sort of it's an incremental process. So what came before allows for what's coming next.
Absolutely.
But the other thing I want to say on that front, which is something I'm very conscious of, is we are a regional podcast, and there is a massive gap in our lineup so far, and that's people from North Africa. I mean, you know, Egypt, of course, is in North Africa, but it straddles, you know, the Middle East proper, if you like.
Yeah.
I have a huge gap. I'm looking very, very consciously for people from Morocco, from Libya, from Tunisia, although Hind Sabri is technically Tunisian, or not technically, she is Tunisian.
She's Tunisian, yeah.
But she's an honorary Egyptian. And Algeria, you know, so I'm really consciously looking for people from there. So I invite our listeners, our audience, if there's anyone you can recommend across any industry from that part of the world, please let us know, because I'm consciously looking to reach that side of the region.
Yeah, and this is a good time to plug sort of our social media, right? Which is at What I Did Next on Instagram, on Twitter. You can reach out to us there. Of course, you can jump onto the website and drop us an email as well. But definitely would love to hear that. And I think, you know, to go back to your point, I think it's about expanding the coverage of it 100%, I think that's an important aspect of it. And I know that some of the conversations we're constantly having, right, in both when we're planning the season ahead to say, okay, who is the right fit and why is this person the right fit? But also I think to some degree, it's also the conversations are getting better and better, right? Again, as you said, building blocks. So what we pursued in season one, we evaluated it and said, oh, this really worked, this didn't. Again, this goes back to sort of the pivot moments and all of that, right? Is doing this little bit of reflection. I think one of the things that perhaps is a common thread again across all of our guests, I mean, we're actually expanding all three seasons, but specifically we're talking about the season three, is how every single person is so open to being reflective, so open to looking back at their journey and saying, here are the good things, here's the thing that didn't work, here's the thing that was pivotal enough, and they're not all always like just a happy memory, right? It's some of them are tough things, but they look back and they reflect and say, if it wasn't for this, you know, I wouldn't be here, or I wouldn't have tasted that success or whatever, which I think is fascinating.
Definitely. And I think no matter who you are or how famous or important you are, we all like to talk about ourselves. And we all like to be asked questions about ourselves that are not the common questions, you know. A lot of the people we've interviewed have been interviewed many times.
Yeah.
And some of the comments we've received over the last three seasons is how sort of off the beaten track, because we come to the question or we come to the interview from the perspective of these pivots or these forks in the road. So it does allow people to stop and think, actually, you know, in 1999 or whatever was a huge year for me because, and they might not think of their life from that perspective. Nadine, this was wonderful.
I have to say it. When I do interviews, not a lot of people actually dig slightly deeper into, you know.
I'm interested in knowing people's motivations.
Yeah, but not a lot of people do that. Yeah. People want to know what you want to do next only, or what do you get your inspiration from.
Like, or the surface.
Just the surface. Come on. You know, I've been doing this for 16 years plus. Don't you want to know where I come from, how I think, what I do? Mm. And I'm sure if we sit here another hour, we can
Absolutely. There's always things to talk about.
100%.
Yeah. I'll add a producer's note here to some degree, right? Which is, I know we're saying this almost sort of nonchalantly, but actually that's not true, which is, you know, there is a reason why the show is anchored around the pivot points, and it's anchored around that. And we want our guests, actually, it is a collaborative process between you and the guest to say, as much as you are the interviewer and as much as you're guiding the conversation and asking the questions, they need to come to the table open to talking about it, having reflected before they walk in the door on their pivot points. And in fact, on the icebreaker questions too, right? Like, they have to actually think about the answers. The idea isn't to spring the question on them and say, okay, I don't know who I want to invite to a dinner. But this idea is that we want you to go think because it reflects where you are and how you feel.
And you know, Chirag, I mean, you know, and I think our audience knows, I don't have set questions. So we have the two icebreakers that the guests get ahead of time, and they think about those. And the only other direction I give is, this is an interview about pivot points. So you have to just think through what are the main areas of your life that either made you change in some way or allowed you to grow. If there's a pivot that is clearly a major, major anchor in their life of some kind, then the conversation will linger there.
Yeah.
It's much more natural. And I think that's, you know, has made people feel quite comfortable. The other thing is that everyone's story is very unique. And I think the people who understand their own story and own it, to me, seem to be more successful and seem to be happier. The people who have reflected on their lives and have contemplated and understood themselves are somehow more content and happier, and in the long run are successful, because being successful is not about a bottom line or a size of your company or whatever. Successful is, are you happy? Are you content? Are the people around you happy? Do they want to be in your company? I mean, that's success. And the people who understand their own story, their own path, I think are the ones who are in a better place. And it comes across. The really interesting thing as well from this season, and I'm guessing if we think back, probably every guest we've had, they're all alphas, you know, in their own domain, in their own industry, in their own world. They're each and every one of them is an alpha character. They forge their own path, often, you know, quite going against the grain in a lot of situations. They're confident and they go forth and they're, you know, get out of my way. I'm on my path kind of thing. And it's interesting because everyone assumes that an alpha has to be loud and in your face. And actually, no, an alpha is just very sure of who they are and they just get on with it. And it's almost like a stealth approach, like a submarine, you know, they can just get down there and do it.
In McKinsey, we always talk about having to be on the balcony or being on the dance floor. You need to understand whether you're on the balcony looking down and seeing the bigger picture, or you're on the dance floor doing stuff. And neither is right or wrong, but those are two very different positions. And you need to actively manage and toggle between the two. And because a lot of this is back to the Sachin Tendulkar question, play a game that you can win. The others were all on the dance floor because they had their networks, they had their connections. I had to play a different game, so I spent a lot of time on the balcony trying to get a bigger picture.
I'm going to bring up something that we were kind of discussing, which is a bit of a, and I don't know if this is like the origin story of the alpha kind of situation, right? But I'll use the word, and we can debate it later. But is for me, it's trauma, and I don't mean trauma in necessarily the default way we think about trauma, although there is some of that. But I think when we've looked back at a lot of these pivots, you find, or at least I feel, that a lot of these pivots have to do with trauma in the way I'm phrasing it and the response to it, right? Which is to say, I'm resilient enough that I'm going to overcome this insane situation in front of me. And in some cases, that is actually literally war for some of our guests. It's resilience. It's I'm going to show the way forward. I'm going to lead this situation. And some of those characteristics that come out and they get formed in a lot of cases during childhood, and that becomes part of their personality, right? So what you're referring to, that's what I think when you say like they become alphas, it's kind of like, well, they know no other way, right? This is the way they can do anything in life. And some of it is not only career-wise, right? It's also just how they lead society, how they lead. I mean, if you look at, for example, Sultan Qasmi, the way he took on during the Arab Spring and became that sort of center for people to follow. Those kind of responses when you see to maybe the alternative word, maybe like in intense adversity, and that response that shows up and then continues to show up, right? So initially it happens at the moment of trauma, what we call it, but then eventually just continues to show up all through their life. And they are seemingly better in terms of saying they can handle a crisis in ways that maybe I couldn't.
No, I would probably just nitpick on your choice of word. I wouldn't necessarily call it trauma, but I would certainly call it a challenge or adversity. Definitely. And I think that if you're able to climb that mountain and get over to the other side intact, then I think you can kind of face anything that comes your way. And, you know, we can have the example of Clarissa Ward, for example. You know, she went and sought out a career where that would take her into war zones. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have an impact on her.
So 9/11 actually happened my senior year, at the very beginning of my final year of university. And, you know, I think everybody has these kind of moments in their life that really change the shape of their destiny, in a sense. And 9/11, I think for many Americans and many people around the world, was one of those. It certainly was for me. I became sort of consumed by the idea that a lot of this was about dysfunctional communication or lack of communication, a sort of dehumanization of the other. And so it became this calling for me that I wanted to go to wherever those places were. I was a little vague on the details at that stage, and try to better understand how this dehumanization, this mutual process of dehumanization, had happened.
And someone like Nadine Kanso, who very clearly talked about her growing up in the Lebanese Civil War, obviously that had massive, I would use the word trauma there for sure, definitely, had massive impact on her. And I think, you know, people who, like Yusuf Adib, also had some childhood major adversity and challenges. Fatma Saeed, for example, had a burnt out at a very young age, and that could have ended her career. And she was very conscious of how to maneuver that situation and how to manage that period in her life. And she's come out stronger and more resilient and she will be able to identify those trigger points when they come up in the future. We all have those moments. I think, I don't know anyone who hasn't had a point in their life where there has been a major challenge or a major problem that they've had to navigate. But I think, I don't know if the challenge creates the alpha, or if you're alpha and you're just able to deal with the challenge. I don't know. I mean, I have no clue, because we know a lot of people who have had challenges that can't cope.
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation that requires a medical professional, I suppose. But I think I'm going to leave this with the note from of course from Yusuf.
I know the one thing I did for myself is to, when I found myself with a lot of hate, mm-hmm. I decided to not have hate in my life.
And the hate was geared to who or what?
Hate towards God. Literally. Why me? Why don't you divide it up? Why is it all me? So I decided not to carry baggage, not to remember. So I don't really remember. I don't sit and sulk.
So it's selective amnesia.
Yeah, I don't want to sulk. I don't want to be like a sore loser. This is my box of chocolates, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to deal with it and just do the best at it. And I'm going to dictate my life. I'm going to create my life.
For me, that's what I think I was getting at with this idea of that's, I think, is the theme. Or that's something that's common among everybody we speak to, is you're able to see the other side. Even though you're faced with something monumental, you can see the other side. You can find the beauty in the other side. You can find the beauty to power through. And that defines you.
But there's another aspect which, you know, gets a raw rap or a raw deal around the world, which is, you know, ambition. They're ambitious. And that is perfectly a good character trait to have. It gets a raw deal, I think, because people assume that, you know, if you're ambitious, then you're going to do anything to get what you want.
Yeah, you become greedy, which is...
Yeah, but I mean, you know, ambition is what powers the world at the end of the day. And ambition is what changes the world. You know, so we all need ambition. And those that don't have ambition, they actually struggle. They actually do struggle. Of course, ambition, you have varying degrees of ambition. But I mean, everyone needs to have a degree of ambition to get anywhere. To have some kind of impact, I think you need to have ambition.
When we come back, we'll get Malak's answers to the staple questions of this season and look ahead into season 4. That's right after this short break.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, actor and comedian Rami Youssef told me about his thoughts on cancel culture, and ex-anchor and now author Hela Gorani told me her thoughts on the future of journalism. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, you can find out more about the screenwriting process with acclaimed filmmaker Mo Hefzi, or about the luxury design industry with Monez and Aya Abdelraouf, the sisters behind Ochtin. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to the wrap-up episode of Season 3 of What I Did Next from A&T Media. So we're going to get into your answers to the staple questions, especially since we debuted new staple questions this season. So let's begin with the first one, which is the one from that's based on Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. I don't know how you say that question all the time. It's a bit of a tongue twister. But, but basically we have three categories, right? Three types of people, which is the connector, the salesman, and...
And the maven, Chirag.
The maven, yeah, which is sad because I identify a lot with the maven, so that's a bit, yeah, okay.
Not yeah,
so
I'm sure you do.
But yes, so what is your answer to this question?
So my answer to this question is like, I mean, I knew it immediately. I'm the connector, definitely. First of all, I'm a matchmaker. I don't know if you know this about me, but I've put together couples. So that's sort of my little hobby.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I kind of have a good feeling about who will get along well. So I always like to mix different people together. But I also think to some extent, I have a bit of the nerdy maven in me because I'm a huge, reader. I read and listen to a lot of news and programs relating to current events. So I have a strong maven side to me, which I think then feeds into the connector side. I don't think I'm a salesperson at all. I don't feel like I have that ability. I think it's a talent. I think to be a salesperson is a talent that you know, it's a hard talent, but I don't think I have it. So I'm more of a, I would major in connector and minor in Maven if it was a degree.
So we do need to talk about this question a little bit, right? So obviously we debuted this for season three. So we're going to kind of share with you guys that we're not going to bring this question back in season four.
This was a question that that we formulated because I just loved the book and I thought the concept was really interesting. And it worked in the sense that when we talked about it with our guests, they were able to clearly pick one of the three labels as suiting them. But it's a bit of a clunky question, and it's a bit hard to grasp. It's a bit long and complicated. So we figured we would, you know, not bring it back for season four, find something else, which we are going to keep under wraps for now.
I think conceptually this question made a lot of sense, right? Is to try and identify the kind of characteristic a person is as an icebreaker. But this question is anything but an icebreaker, right? It requires a long explanation up front.
Exactly.
So, and then of course the assumption that we need our listeners to have read the book. And then we can't also, I think one of the tricky things that I found, especially when we were kind of crafting the episodes together, is there was no way to have to keep explaining what the three things are ahead of every question in case someone joined in, say, in episode six and wanted to listen and they were like, what is this question about? And so the only way we could do that effectively was we kept throwing that back to social media and say, look, if you want more information on this, go to social media because we've done the explainers there.
And that's not a good way to run it.
Yeah, it's a bit disjointed and I don't think that's right. So that would be, that's the reason why. But it was still, I think it was an entertaining and a good insightful question to a large degree.
It was insightful because it's interesting to see how people see themselves. And that was a great icebreaker from that perspective. But to get to their answer, it took a lot of work, basically.
Agreed. Okay, so let's jump on to the second question, which is the social media one, which I think both from an icebreaker perspective, but also from just the amount of opinions we got or the responses we got in terms of that, I think was just really interesting. So, but let's start by talking about you. Are you team Twitter or are you team Instagram, first of all?
So I am both. I use them very differently. All our guests this season had had a very clear and strong opinion on the social media question. So I think I would probably relate closest to Clarissa Ward's answers in the sense of how I use social media. So for me, Twitter is very much a news platform. It's an extension of my news feeds in a way. Here, I like several accounts. So I like, I follow Clarissa Ward. I have for a long time. I find her very insightful, and she's always at the sort of the hotspot with a very interesting perspective. So it's not just news, there's a very empathetic quality to her, and she brings that across in her coverage. I also follow an account called The Big Pharaoh, and I'm dying to know who he is or she is. So this is an Egyptian on Twitter, and he covers Egypt quite cynically, I have to say. But he very often posts articles and reports that I wouldn't find on my own or wouldn't have the time to go and search for. So I like him or her. And then I like, I don't know if you know Ayman Mohiddin. He's half Egyptian, half Palestinian, and he's an anchor on MSNBC. He's a very, very interesting journalist because he's very much part of the mainstream media in the US, part of the NBC network. But, you know, we're always used to seeing American media being very one-sided, very black and white about the Middle East. So they clearly bring the Arab perspective, and their coverage has been stellar. It's just been, for once, coming out of an American channel, very, very interesting. And he's extremely vocal. He's extremely outspoken. And so I follow him on Twitter. And then I follow Greg Carlstrom, who Clarissa also mentioned, who is the Middle East Bureau chief for The Economist. And he is hilarious. So apart from the fact that he's very insightful and he really comes to all questions of the Middle East very cleverly and from a very interesting perspective, he's just really funny as well. So he's someone I follow. And then I follow someone completely random who would not be necessarily known in the Middle East, who's a very controversial figure in the UK. I think he's absolutely hilarious, and he goes against the grain of all this sort of, you know, PC world and everyone being politically correct. And Piers Morgan, who you might know, Chirag. So I find him absolutely hilarious. And you have to take him with a massive pinch of salt. You know, half the time he's just trying to wind people up.
Yeah, and the remaining half he puts his foot in his mouth, but it's still hilarious.
Absolutely. But a lot of the time he's right, he's spot on. You know, he's seen as a right-wing nut, but he's actually not. He's sort of apolitical, and he just sort of blabs away about whatever's bugging him that day. We were around the same world when I was a journalist in London. He was at the Mirror, and I was at Punch magazine, and so we had a lot of overlap of friends that we had in common. So I remember him from a long time ago.
Right.
And then for Instagram, so Instagram for me is, you know, a very passive medium. Doctor's waiting room kind of thing. But there are a few accounts that I really do like a lot. One is called The Daily Stoic, which, if you know about the Stoic philosophy, it's all about just common sense. Yeah. And you know, and so they have a daily, they have more than one actually. And then there's this great doctor in the UK, in the US, and she has an account called Fasting MD. And she talks about nutrition and health and how fasting has helped her, you know, all the intermittent fasting that is very en vogue right now. But her take, again, is very common sense. And then I love Cairo Scene and I love Startup Scene, which are Egypt-based accounts. But I believe Startup Scene is regional. And they're great because they are very much of the moment. They give you a snapshot of what's happening right now. And they're hugely entertaining. And then I love one writer called Mo Gaudat, who is an ex-Google business developer. He has his own website. He has his own podcast. And he has an Instagram account, and he posts a lot of really interesting things. And he wrote a really interesting book called Solve for Happy, where he talks about how to be happy, but from a mathematical equation point of view. So it's quite an interesting take, very interesting, and he's a very interesting guy. Another Instagram account I love is by one of my best friends, so I'm going to plug her a little bit. But apart from plugging her, I really do love it. And I've purchased a lot of things from her. And it's called Jam by Hidayat. This is a interior design account. She's basically a textile designer as well as interior designer. And then a total like escapism account is Condé Nast Traveler. So you just sit back in your doctor's waiting room and you scroll through the pictures and you think, oh, I'd love to go on safari. I'd love to go to the Maldives. I'd love to go to Japan. And you just, you know, you get lost for a few minutes. And so I love that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? Like when you say that, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking about my own usage. And for me, it's become a lot about consumption, right? Like I'm not creating very much on social anymore. What was interesting as well is some of the responses we got from all of our guests. I think there was this common thread of this underlying, for some of them, it was actually very direct of saying, no, toxic place, no thanks. But even I think generally as well, even for the ones that are on social media had like a lot of caveats to put, right? So even Nadine was kind of like, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not really enjoying having to put that much up about myself, but that's what the work demands, right? Like it's very this, like I have to do this not because I want to. And I think that that's really interesting that we're all kind of reaching a very similar space, I think.
I think we're all a bit saturated, right? That we've reached saturation point. But the interesting thing for me from this season regarding our guests was I was very surprised by the use, their use of social media. So I was surprised that generally there wasn't a divide by generation or age. You'd assume that the older generation just wouldn't use it. And in fact, to be fair, our two eldest guests were nowhere to be seen on social media. So Ahmed Haykel and Kito Deber consciously do not use it, don't want to be on it. You know, they'll jump onto WhatsApp because they have to organize a meeting, but that's it. But having said that, Fatma Saeed, our youngest member, is, you know, very consciously doesn't want to use social media and doesn't have WhatsApp.
Yeah, that was the more interesting one, I think, yeah.
I don't know if I should say this publicly. No, but I feel connecting with people has been so easy that we've been taking it for granted. And I feel much happier without it because I realize that I'm actually in touch with the people who I want to be in touch with and who want to be in touch with me in a very, in a much more personal way.
In a more real way.
And I feel that social media has made it so easy, not only WhatsApp, but also other social media sources has made it so easy for people to just ask about them, but actually forgot that you asked. It was a bit difficult. I thought I would deactivate it or delete it for 2 weeks at the beginning because I had a very intense working period. And then afterwards, I realized, why would I, like, I was so happy these 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, I woke up not
How
looking at my phone.
The interesting thing that you mentioned also is that there is a real love-hate relationship. You know, people need it and they have to go on there for work or whatever. But you feel that, you know, people just don't really want to interact that much with it anymore.
No, they don't. I mean, I still think, by the way, that it made for an interesting icebreaker question in the process, right? I think maybe we may have gone into it thinking, okay, we'll get a sense of what they do in their free time and what are they reading and watching and listening to. But it became more a commentary of social media, whether you look at it from a toxic perspective, you look at a saturation perspective, whether it was just there is benefit. I mean, some of it, it's not like there was no benefit. I mean, there was benefit perspective, but it became a commentary, and which I think was just was interesting.
And you're right. We came to the question as a very light, you know, intro chat before we got into the heavy duty life trajectory stuff. And it ended up being quite different.
but yeah, since we made this announcement for the previous question, we'll make this as well. This question is coming back, guys, so don't worry. I'm not tripping, but the question's away. All right. Well, you know, as always, I mean, I think, like I said, this is an interesting tradition. I'm really enjoying the fact that we sit down and kind of can recap a little bit and see what we achieved in this season. From our perspective, it's more about what have we achieved and what are we going to target next. And then from the listener's perspective, I think just some of the common things that come out when we kind of look across different industries, different age groups, different experiences, actually, and in this case, different countries. And how yet there are some common threads that we kind of see across a few guests and kind of how, whether it's an approach thing or whether it's just a response thing or it's commentary on social media. But I think all of this is just, it makes for a nice sort of wrap up to say, you know, it's been a very exciting and interesting season even for us to put together. And, you know, we're, at least I am looking forward to what's coming next. Was not an unintentional pun on the name.
I agree. I would actually just like to do a call to action to our listeners. And I mentioned it earlier in our talk today, but if there are people that you would like to hear from, if you want to hear someone's life story, if there's someone you're curious about, drop us a line. You can write to us either through social media or on the website. You know, we're trying to bring as many interesting people as possible to the table. So please share your thoughts and let us know who you'd like to hear from.
And as always, you know, this has been a fun season. We hope you guys have enjoyed it too. And we'll be back very, very soon. We'll make an announcement in a few weeks. But until then, you can follow the show on social media. So that's Twitter, that's Instagram, that's also LinkedIn. to get updates on the show. We'll obviously be doing some interesting clips and sharing as we wait for season 4. And then we'll make the announcements as soon as we're ready. Awesome. Thank you so much, Malak.
Thanks, Chirag. And thanks to everyone who listened, and keep listening. Bye. Thank you for joining us today as we close out season 3. This episode of What I Did Next was brought to you by A&T Media with me, Malak Fouad, and Chirag Desai, our producer. A thank you to our sponsors this season, Marekes and EFG Hermes. Please remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for updates on the show. Just search for What I Did Next. And if you've enjoyed the season, or even just one episode, you can leave us a review in your favorite podcast player. It really helps our show to grow. We look forward to welcoming you back to the show after the summer. Until then, take care.